Hello, everybody. I'm Dell Chores.
And I'm Emerson Collins, and you're watching The Dell and Emerson Show. Straight talk.
Real gay!
Oh, I felt like that was very good.
Oh, I did it. I begged him. I begged him, y'all. I begged him, please let me have the real gay line, and he did.
He I believe that audition for this particular homosexual would definitely get you a callback.
You think?
Yes.
But not an offer in the room.
Just straight to producers even. But, you know, always at the end, there's some suit who's going to want to have an opinion about what kind of gay.
Well, how are you, Emerson Collins? Didn't you just drive? Road trip? No?
No.
Oh, okay. I get confused. I have friends who are actually getting in their car and then just driving. Just driving and then flipping and then coming back. Our friends Chris Pudlow and Ashley, that's what they do like twice a week. It helps.
You're like, get to the grocery store, get out, tool around town. A change of scenery certainly helps the mental state.
Well, my change of scenery lately has been walking around the block with three chihuahuas with a mask on. Oh, I got a new mask. Let me show you before we get started. I want to show everybody because Eureka Springs, our gig that we had to cancel, they sent me this mask. It's a lot.
It's upside down.
Is it? Oh, wait. Is it upside down? Okay. There we go. I have to tie it. I love it. I walk out in the neighborhood and I go, yeah, this is me.
Very appropriate and effective.
You know,
a little advertisement.
The three chihuahuas usually, you know, they're suspecting. Yeah.
Yes. Like, feels like there's a guest.
Now this mask seals the deal.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome on this Tuesday afternoon evening. Whether you're joining us on Facebook or YouTube or Periscope, please share the broadcast with your friends and followers. Invite them to join us. If you have questions, thoughts, comments to the broadcast, type them in. We can see them. We have a super exciting show today. Willem, who was, of course, in Southern Baptist Sissies with us, a star of RuPaul's Drag Race and internet bon vivant, will be joining us. And then a new friend, Jay Jordan, is a fantastic stand-up comedian actor with a brand new comedy album out called Jay Jordan, y'all. He's a Mississippi boy. Will be joining us as well. So stick around and we'll do fun things.
Thanks for introducing me to him. I'm so excited to meet him. And of course, I love Willem, and we all have worked together. But, many times people send you, this person's funny. Jay Jordan is hysterical. That clip you sent me, I was just laughing my ass off. So I'm really excited to have him today.
Yeah, he's effortlessly funny.
I wanted to say one thing, Emerson. I know that we'll talk about it and discuss it, so don't get mad at me. But I know that we're all getting a lot of Giving Tuesday notices today, and a lot are coming from theaters to me. And our theaters are in trouble. So I know that we're all being asked for donations and today, but think about your theaters as you give.
Yep. The artists that create the entertainment, you know, it's not enough to live, but we should live deliberately and well. And the arts help us do that.
And on stage.
Yes.
and in the audiences.
Yes.
So it's one thing I really miss. So anyway, all right. Onward.
All right. Well, we'll jump on into the news. Welcome, everyone. This first story, you know, sort of turns our typical religious story on its head. Cardinal Konrad Krajewski is the Vatican's distributor of alms. He oversees philanthropy for the Catholic Church. Now, he was told of the plight of trans sex workers in Italy struggling during the pandemic. He was informed that many of them living in a beach town near Rome were undocumented and unable to get government aid. And so he has been nicknamed the Pope's Robin Hood. He wired these sex workers enough money to feed and care for themselves. When asked about it, he said, they don't have any resources. They could not have gone to a politician or a parliamentarian. They went to the pastor and the pastor came to us. Then he said, I don't understand why this is getting so much attention. This is ordinary work for the church. It's normal. This is how the church is a field hospital. Now, the thing is, Cardinal, unfortunately, and all too often, this is not normal for churches. So I thought it was an incredibly impressive story. Trans people, sex workers, immigrants, undocumented immigrants, are some of the most vulnerable people around the world. And so that he sent money specifically targeted to help these people was finally a positive thing we could say about the Catholic Church.
I love this story. Thanks for including that, Emerson. It was when I read it, I had not heard this story until you sent me the show. So thank you for that. In other wonderful news, I wept watching CNN the other day when Anderson Cooper announced that he was a dad. It was just so beautiful the way he worded it and his own emotion talking about how he wished he could share this child with his mother and his brother and his dad. And the baby's name is Wyatt Morgan Cooper. And Anderson said, as a gay kid, I never thought it would be possible to have a child. And I'm so grateful for those who have paved the way and all the doctors and nurses and everybody involved in my son's birth. And then, of course, bigotry reared its ugly head. And Michael Brown wrote an article for Charisma News saying, he's a doctor and a pastor. And I don't know if you know this, Emerson, but he is a Jew for Jesus. He says a boy deserves. Yes, he is. He's a Jewish Christian. I don't know why. To me, it's like, you know, gay Republicans. So here's what he said, and I'm not going to do him Southern because, you know, I don't think that's his.
No, that is the default. Let's be honest.
Yes, it is the go-to for me. I always know I can nail that one. He said a boy deserves his mother. Yet, if I understand your plan correctly, your son will not be raised together by her and by you. That's what saddens me the most. Can you imagine what your life would have been like today without the influence of your mother? Well, certainly poorer. Thank you, McGee Monteith, for that observation. Can you imagine, he says, Anderson Cooper without Gloria Vanderbilt? Who would you be without your mom? Think back to all the memories the two of you share, especially since you lost your dad at the age of 10. Wyatt will be separated from birth from his mother by choice and not his own. Well, first of all, you stupid motherfucker, that is not his mother. That is a surrogate who was hired to carry their child. So that is not his mother. And secondly, none of your business. None of your business. Nobody cares what you think. Anderson can do this without you. It doesn't need to sadden you. So shut up. He then on Twitter, he says, by the way, it says Jewish believer in Jesus, the first thing on his Twitter. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, what happens when I say it's sad that Anderson Cooper's son will not have the same relationship with his mother that Anderson had with his? That makes me a hater, a bigot, a selfish Christo-fascist. And so I decided that I would tweet him back. And
of course.
I said, Dr. Michael Elmore, Dr. Michael L. Brown, for everybody who wants to tweet it. I said, here's a scripture tailor-made for you. Matthew 7:15, beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. P.S. Fuck you. And then I also said, and yes, it does. And don't forget, it also makes you an insensitive asshole. Done.
It certainly does. I loved the way Anderson so openly shared about this. And part of the reason I included this bigot story is just because, you know, Anderson's clearly rather private in contrast to, you know, Gloria being a public figure for so much of his life. And the incredible amount of loss that he experienced with his father and his brother and Gloria dying recently, you know, this new joy in his life for someone who clearly worked so hard to be exactly what the news is supposed to be in telling stories and holding people accountable. I love it. And also love that it seemed like he's been watching Andy Cohen's journey and sort of following right behind that. And now their kids will clearly grow up together as friends. And that's sort of adorable.
Yes, it is.
He said he did another interview talking about it. And he said the idea of going shopping for baby clothes was like, he was like, oh, I need to do all this stuff and then the lockdown and I can't. And he said, so now his Wyatt is just going to be wearing all of Andy's son's Ben's hand-me-downs. It's like, Perfect. Andy got everything. I don't have to shop. I don't like shopping. I can just wear. So Wyatt's in hand-me-downs from the cousin friend.
Oh, well, it's all very, very sweet.
That's so funny. Zanna just said the same thing that Anderson said on Colbert, his child is wearing Cohen's hand-me-downs. I mean, anybody that grew up in a family with more than one kid knows that hand-me-down life. As the oldest, I got all the clothes first.
Well, yeah, because you have two brothers, so they
And then they were passed down. We also, my poor mother doing laundry for three boys, until I was probably like 14, all of our shirts, underwear, shorts, in the tags had a one, in Magic Marker, had one mark, or two marks, or three marks, so she could sort the laundry quickly.
Oh, so y'all were son one, son two, and son three?
You know, it was like one hash mark, two hash marks, or three, so that when she was sorting, she didn't have to think about whose is this?
She's smart. So, well, I want to, for those of you who know my past and my childhood, why do you think that I never got any of my brother's hand-me-downs? He was 2 years older than me, and I never got any of his hand-me-downs.
I wonder why. I wonder if it was the basis. I wonder if it was the basis for an entire character's psychosis.
It was, oh my God, there's so much damage. I don't even know if I can finish the show now.
Oh, I feel like we'll get through it. Sean York said he was watching a very sort of wedding last night.
Sort of, yeah. Oh, good, Sean. So many people have been sending me notes and messages that they're discovering our work, and we appreciate that. We do.
Jack said he was the next to youngest of five boys. My early years were all hand-me-downs. I feel like we all know that life.
Well, I had a skinny brother, not me.
Well, on the plus side, you got new clothes. So, you know, silver lining.
Husky, big husky jeans, Emerson.
All right. There's I love this.
Lining this here.
I love this next story. In this time of the pandemic and people struggling, Bree and Lindsay Leverton plan to get married in a historic mansion in Austin on Good Friday. They joked about it, saying nothing says he is risen like a good old lesbian wedding. Already my kind of lesbians. But then they had a family member diagnosed with COVID-19. And Lindsay said, in that moment, we realized no one is promised tomorrow and we didn't want to wait a year. So they called around and found that Doc's Drive-In in Buda, Texas was still open, and they moved their wedding there and did it. So this past Tuesday, they walked down an aisle of cars at the drive-in wearing cowboy boots under their wedding dresses, and guests watched from the cars and from home while it was live streamed on social media.
You know, Buda, Texas is about 50 people. It's very, very tiny. And what's crazy is two of my best friends from Baylor, two of the editors of the Lariat that were fired over that Playboy controversy, Cindy Slovak and Jeff Martin, who are married now, they have lived in Buda forever, and they have the local paper there.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I bet they wrote a big old article about this.
They did. I'm still in contact with them. I'm going to ask them.
Go ask them and see if they talk to those lesbians about their drive-in wedding. I just love it. These two Texas lesbians, like, we're doing it. This is how we're doing it. We're making it happen in a way that's safe for everyone, and we are not going to wait.
Like, it's my kind of wedding. That's the kind of wedding I would write about. Fuck it. Let's do it at the drive-in.
Yes.
All right. Oh, it's me. I'm up. Okay, there we got Brazil news. President Jair Bolsonaro, I went to YouTube to learn how to pronounce it so I wouldn't get chastised, infamously told Playboy in 2011 he would rather have a dead son than a gay one, saying, "I would be incapable of loving a gay son. I prefer that he die in an accident." So now he is attacking the World Health Organization, saying, should we follow their education policy guidelines too? So here are the policies that he's questioning. For children 0 to 4 years old, satisfaction and pleasure. I mean, he quoted them like this. Satisfaction and pleasure when touching their bodies, masturbation. For children 4 to 6 years old, a positive gender identity, masturbation in early childhood. Same-sex relationships, many times 9 to 12 years old, first sexual experience. The claim, though, is a wild misinterpretation of a 2010 document that did not encourage these behaviors. All it did was it informed adults that it is natural for children to be curious about their bodies and sexuality as they grow. So, Jair, fuck off.
It's just so stupid. I mean, the amount of trauma that we create around healthy body exploration and conversation damages people for so long. I've never told you this. But I was once told in adolescence in a discussion surrounding sexuality that if I held my penis in one hand and the Bible in the other, I would not feel the need to do that anymore. Bye.
Hang on a second. I'm grabbing a Bible.
Are you going to try it? Let me know.
Okay. No, it's still there.
Still there.
Still the desire, especially in a pandemic.
Also, honestly, all those people that want people to wait until marriage to have sex ought to be the first ones teaching about masturbation. Because if you've got a prayer of accomplishing that, you're going to need to take care of it yourself for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Masturbation, I'm telling you, it's just been my salvation during this pandemic. I mean, it's like, I have gone through everything on Pornhub, Emerson. There is nothing left that I have not explored. Nothing.
Just gotten to the entire end of the website.
Y'all, come on. We need new product. Come on.
I feel like that's it. There's nothing new on the explore page.
I mean, I'm right like, now. Oh, I've seen this one.
And somehow porn reruns just don't play the same as like Designing Women or Golden Girls.
No, they do not. They
well,
do not.
I already know how this ends.
Well, they all kind of end the same. But
I mean, it is true.
With me turning it off after I'm done.
Oh.
Well, here's the deal. And I said this in my last show. If you leave it on, you as a codependent, I start worrying about the boys. I start worrying about their childhood. And I start going, because I'm a codependent. So. Yeah.
It's true.
Learn. Turn it off.
Ashley said, Jair also attended an anti-lockdown rally and said, so what about the 5,000 dead in Brazil? Yeah, I mean, he's truly terrible. I mean, he's terrible about the rainforest and the Amazon. You know, the story we did the other day about the Brazilian drag queen guy, period. Brazil, there's really hostile government under this regime for the LGBTQ community there. It's why we continue to sort of highlight those stories. But on to a fun one. In Michigan City, Indiana, the Fiddlehead restaurant has organized a dragside pickup service every Saturday during stay-at-home orders. So they get bright, colorful, dolled-up local queens wearing their best drag, help deliver food to patrons who order takeout, waiting outside the restaurant from their cars. Owner Aaron O'Reilly said, we thought it'd be a good idea to brighten some people's days, having something that's a little different and a little fun. Fiddlehead is an LGBTQ-owned and operated business and has been open for 5 years.
And next week we'll have a story about a bigot who opposed this.
Certainly, about somebody protesting out there. Real quickly, if you just joined the broadcast, welcome. Wherever you are, we can see your comments. We're getting ready to head to our discussion of our film for the week, but please share the broadcast to your friends on Facebook and Twitter and Periscope and YouTube. You're welcome to weigh in. And if you are enjoying the show, we'd love and appreciate if you contributed a tip, $1, $5, $10, $1,000, if you're just rolling in money like Scrooge McDuck. You can Venmo to me at Emerson Collins or send us via PayPal to beardcollinshoresproductions@gmail.com. It's at the bottom of the screen. If you can't, no worries. We're thrilled that you're here. Sharing the broadcast and spending some time with us is a great contribution as well.
All right.
Well,
I love this discussion. I'm excited.
So on Friday, our assignment was to watch the half of it, a new indie queer drama comedy on Netflix. So if you watched it, if you have questions, comments, leave them now. We'll share our thoughts about it. It's from an amazing director, Alice Wu. What'd you think?
Well, she also wrote it. I mean, she wrote and wrote it.
I know, she's just like you. She's Taiwanese born, but grew up in San Francisco.
I loved it. It was a perfect movie for this little pandemic. It was a coming of age movie that set in a small town. So, you know, some conveniences, yes, in storytelling, but in that, I didn't care. I mean, and the main reason I didn't care is because of Leah Lewis. I am nuts for the lead of this movie. I just love everything about her. What about her? What do you think?
For those of you who didn't watch it, it was basically like Quirino de Bergerac. So this sort of, right?
Did you just come up with that, or has that been in any publicity?
I'm sure somebody's put it in a review, but I didn't read it anywhere. But I'm sure I'm not the first gay to think of it, because it is a take on Cyrano de Bergerac. It is, there is this, on the surface, doofusy white boy who's in love with a girl, and he doesn't know how to articulate it. And so Ellie Chu is this Asian girl, and that she gets paid by other students to write papers on their behalf to make them seem smarter. He asks her to write a love letter. She starts out just doing one, and then she continues to write for him and with him, and we come to discover she's also in love with this same girl. And of course, it gets revealed that it's both of them. Neither one of them end up with her. But my favorite thing, I loved so many things about this movie. It was smart. It was, there's the normal storytelling things you need to do, but the characters were so interesting, and the nuance is so subtle. Because the real great relationship in this movie was the friendship that grew between the two of them. Yeah. And how they built each other up in surprising ways. And of course, your first loves, nobody ever ends up with them. So that almost became incidental for me by the end. But I thought the scene, there's a big scene in the church where they start talking about what love is. And this doofus boy Trip is saying, love is kind, love is patient. And our lead Josh and lead Ellie both sort of interject and say that love is more than that. It's messy and complicated, and it's ugly, and it's difficult, and sometimes it's just in the trying. And there was a big discussion where Ellie doesn't believe in God, and the girl she's in love with says, that must be nice, and she said, no, it's lonely. I just thought it dovetailed so interestingly with a world you've explored so often.
I did
but
too.
From a very different perspective.
Yeah, me too. I love that, that this young, smart girl. She did remind me a little bit of Mark in Southern Baptist Sissies, because she questioned everything. There was so much that happened in her life that was and her intelligence prevented her almost from believing in God. That's the way I felt, you know. And then, but yet, she longed for that. She missed that. She wishes that it wasn't so lonely. I also love the kid that played the best friend, with Daniel Deemer, I believe is his name. Or Dimer. And if there's ever an opportunity for Michael C. Hall to have a son in anything, he should play his son, don't you think?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and she wrote so well against the stereotypes of these characters, you know, the dumb jock and the smart Asian girl. She leaned, you know, it's like it that's your first judgment, and then it's immediately pulled away that he's sweet and sensitive and she's complicated. And then one of the big central devices of the film, the concept of the difference between a good painting and a great painting is five bold strokes. And they kept talking about, you know, the willingness to risk ruining a good painting with five bold strokes to make it a great one. But if you don't risk it, you know, what do you end up with? Do you end up happy-ish and safe-ish? And I just found that even now, challenging and something to remember, you know, always risk the bold stroke in search of the great rather than settling for the good out of fear.
Well, it's not unlike what I tell actors. I go, take the risk. And I think in life, the same thing, take the risk. And I love that. I love that part of it. There were little things I loved about it too. I love the relationship with the teacher. I just love it, you know, because the character, and this is not giving anything away, I think it's in the trailer, she writes all the theme papers and makes, like, that's how she basically supports her family, the teacher basically loves it, so she doesn't have to read shit. She gets like six different approaches to the same subject through this amazing mind.
I felt that teacher was a very real reflection of a certain kind of teacher that definitely exists, and she was hilarious.
Yeah.
Erica said, it was so good, but I wanted more. I mean, it's definitely a story. I'd love to see Ellie go to college, see what happens when she has her first real girlfriend. These just characters that were so charming and authentic and not forced, and it wasn't like overly cutesy You know, and it was complicated. There was a very melancholy, like, nobody got what they wanted. The hot girl that had three different people in love with her still is a little afraid of what to do. Everybody's like on to the next chapter. But with a little bit of hope that if they risk the bold stroke, they'll maybe achieve something great.
And there were at least three great kisses in the movie that in various combinations that you go, oh, wow. You know, loved it. Yeah.
Erica asked, what is the picture behind Dale? You didn't tell us about your set today.
Well, my set, I went with the theme of yellow because I went and I went to Trader Joe's, just mask up and with alcohol spray and everything. I get so anxious going out, but they had sunflower. So that is Kristen McCullough, who starred in my play Yellow, made that collage for me and it's all the pictures from the production in 2010 of Yellow here in Los Angeles. And Stephen Stanley had, the reason I drug it out is Stephen Stanley reposted a review from, I guess, several years ago, because it's 2010, in his memories. And it reminded me of what, every now and then, as you know, Emerson, we've been together all those, you have that special cast, that perfect cast. And that was a perfect cast.
Jason asks, where did 3D Jesus go? He's still there. He's just off to the side.
Listen, 3D Jesus. Well, if you want to see him, he's there. He's just a little bit hidden right now. I did not take him down. But don't y'all like the yellow? And then this yellow, this is my friend Ronan Newton-John, who we lost. And I love the yellow. It was the theme of yellow today. I even got yellow. I've got Willem on my shirt, who's the yellow.
Yes. All right. Thank you to Zanna, who sent us a little Venmo.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, that
you want to
that whole, I mean, someone should have sent you some money just over that Queer and O Divergerac.
You're welcome. All right. You want to bust this next story?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay. George Cukor. You know what I did, Emerson? I did research this week. I went and I saw how Joan Crawford gave him her Oscar. She said, and the winner goes to George Cukor. Okay, he directed A Star Is Born. He's just an iconic director, Philadelphia Story. He won the Oscar for My Fair Lady and was apparently rather open about sexuality through his career. He had parties that were legendary and very sordid crowd. I love that you use the word sordid crowd on Sundays. So biographer Patrick McGilligan detailed Cukor's social life in his book, George Cukor, A Double Life. In it, friends and associates dish on his parties and just what to expect depending on the night. Actress Kitty Carlisle, I always saw her on To Tell the Truth. He liked distinguished, famous people, and you always expected good food. You accepted his invitation with alacrity, yes, because he made everyone feel important. He made everyone feel as though they were the most welcome guest. And I know you're wondering, where's the gay shit? Where's the gay? Okay, here it comes. The book also explained that on Sundays, that's why we have Sunday Funday, Cukor would host all male pool parties in which gay and bisexual men could come, meet, mingle, and hook up, as seen in Ryan Murphy's Hollywood. So, and is it, do you have anything to say about that?
Yes.
Okay, good. What do you have to say?
I'm just so fascinated. You know, it's like, it's the blessing and the curse of the eras where we had to be hidden and whatever, because I'm just fascinated by these pool parties. The idea that there was just like a Sunday afternoon free for all, you know, this was pre-HIV and that there was like a safe place where people could gather and do things. And obviously, you know, it was a terrible time to like be publicly homosexual, but, you know, ignoring that part, I'm like, ooh, that just sounds so fun and free and frolicky.
Well, you know, Runyon Canyon was owned by Errol Flynn, and supposedly there were lots of those up there, those sort of orgy pool parties.
Up on Runyon?
Yes, up on that big, the pool was out on that big thing where you have the park bench where you could, it's closed right now. And you said if time, and I want to make time for this, Franklin Graham is back in the news because we've been following this Samaritan Purse Central Park tent hospital that is homophobic, and they have made people sign all this shit to work there that it goes against all kinds of stuff that shouldn't be. So, and one is very anti-LGBT, and they have Corey Johnson, openly gay councilman, says that they have given him 2 weeks to dismantle Samaritan's Purse Tent Hospital and leave the area. I have something else to say to Franklin Graham. That leather jacket that you are wearing on that promo on CNN and all the news, it doesn't make you hip on any level. It makes you look stupid.
I mean, that's what makes them look stupid. I mean, geez. Like, it's, I'm thrilled that they're having to leave, that basically they're being forced out. It's also a good sign, you know, that it's a result of things going better, that New York is maintaining itself well. Although, I gotta say, we didn't even put this on the list, but Willem didn't read the email and they were, wouldn't work in Safari, so he's downloading Firefox and he'll be here in a minute. I saw this morning on Twitter some group of gays in New York having some like house party last night, and then they posted it on Instagram. It was like there was a DJ, multiple people around, and it's sort of the worst. It's a reminder, one, that every community has terrible people in it, and there are people that are stupid enough to do things they shouldn't do, and then also to sit in the privilege of being able to flaunt it and be like, look at us at our house party at 8 a.m. Like, all the drugs, all the stupid, and they're getting appropriately raked across the coals.
Good, because
I'll
become Lorraine Shores and go over there and I'll tell them off. I'll say
yes. Well, without further ado, let us welcome to the show our friend, Queen Extraordinaire, Willa.
Oh, it's
okay, down. Hey, girl.
Hi, Willa. Look who I'm wearing.
You guys sound like robots that keep picking up, and I can't really hear anything, but you look nice.
Is it really struggling for you?
Is it really struggling for me right now? I'm pretty okay.
No, I meant the connection, but you look great.
Oh, yeah, that's Struggleisha right now.
Sorry about your poor people Wi-Fi.
Where'd you go? Frozen.
You look great. We'll just look at you.
I can't see nothing.
He said bye. We'll see if he can get it to work and come back. For those of you who don't know, who are newer to our lives together, Willem was in Dell's Southern Baptist Sissies that we shot as a play and a film in 2012.
Yes.
Which is so crazy. It's now streaming on Broadway HD. Do you remember our conversation where it occurred to both of us at the same time to ask Willem to be?
I remember exactly where it was, Emerson. We were coming up that road by the Magic Castle, that little thing, and we originally, Emerson was going to play Benny, but he had played Benny, the part that Willem ultimately did. And then one day, we didn't have a Mark, and we were like, who can be Mark? Who can be Mark? And I just looked at Emerson and I go, you are Mark. You are Mark. That's who you are. You should play Mark. And Emerson said, I thought you'd never ask.
No. Like, I mean, I didn't want to suggest it myself, but that seems like such a great idea.
Yeah. And so that was, it was one of those things where you go, oh my God, this makes so much sense. So then the part of Benny was available, and we're both thinking separately. And we're coming up, and I said, I had a really good idea for Benny. And Emerson said, so do I. Can I go first? Right? Am I telling it right?
Yes.
And it was Willem. We both thought of Willem.
Can you hear us now?
Are you talking about how severely my pussy pops?
Yes. Like, it pops like that hubba, bubba yubba, bubble yum. Like that old school big bubble, big pop that just lands on your face.
Sticky, your hair.
Yes. We were telling Southern Baptist Sissy stories while we gave you time.
We were.
What have you been doing?
This quarantine, I've been gaining weight. I went to the doctor today, and she went, "Oh, you're bigger." And then I went, "Yeah." And she went, "I mean, like fitter." And I was like, "All right, yeah, I heard what you said."
Nice save, doctor.
So just like watching TV, not traveling or going anywhere. I think traveling is like my cardio. Did you guys go away? Oh, it doesn't work now. Hello?
No, we're seeing you. We can see you still. Just do a monologue.
I can't. I can't memorize things now.
I tell people all the time, you know, Emerson and I, we both came up at the same time, basically. We both had the thought of casting you in Southern Baptist Sissies. And I think we offered you, it was an offer only. It was one of those, an offer only. And you came in and slayed. But I have to say, you were not used to Del Shore's monologues that rambled and went all over the place. So you worked really hard.
I'm good for a good, like, 5 and under, like, hooker roll on, like, some CBS cops. I'm good at, like, 5 lines at a time, like, little boop, boop, back forth. But, like, just talking to people for that long, I hate the sound of my own voice, too. So that didn't help.
But I remember at Outfest, you said, I think I'm good, right?
And you guys are frozen. So I'm like, am I boring?
Can you hear us, though? Can you at least hear us? Because we can hear you. You're not frozen to us.
Oh, my God. I can't hear anything.
Nothing at all?
No, now I can. When you just said nothing at all, but like I'll say something and then I'll stop and then you guys will be frozen. So I'm like, do I suck? Do they not like me?
Well, now you just look like those when we're having problems in editing and things are out of sync.
Is it weird? I mean, you've been basically traveling for the last 10 years. Is it weird to be at home for this long?
Yeah, I hate it.
You like the road, don't you?
I mean, my job is going out to the most fun clubs in every town that I go to, in every city. Why would I ever give up my job? I love it. So not having to, I don't get to go out and party and have fun every weekend. Sucks.
Who do you miss, of all the queens that you've worked with, who do you miss the most?
I miss probably like Kimchi, Crystal Summers.
Oh.
Bob's real fun to tour with. I do a podcast with Alaska, so I still like talk to her a lot.
Well, and speaking of, so your podcast, that's one of the only podcasts I listen to because I'm never in the car, so I don't have like time. So even though everyone I know has a podcast.
I get it.
But I love Race Chaser and I love hearing you guys. How are you feeling about the current season with all the like shenanigans?
Well, we weren't even sure if we were going to do it because we had a pin in us from this HBO show. It was called Bulk.
You're so stupid. Wait, pause. That's what your doctor was saying yesterday. They were like, oh, you're clearly working out for a role in Bulk. Our Allison consults with us.
Oh, good. Yeah. She told me you had to pre-read.
Well, obviously I had to pre-read. There's not enough HGH in the world to let me qualify for that role.
It's all angles and lasers.
Did you know Sherry Pie before all this shit hit the fan?
Okay, you're frozen picking your nose and you're frozen smiling.
Perfect.
Great. I scratch my nose and it's like I'm so picking.
Everyone can see and hear you.
Who are you enjoying the show among the other people?
Hello? What?
What queens do you like?
Oh, I like them all pretty much. I don't have problems with many.
I've been impressed with this season, like with the range of like drag types. Like there what didn't feel like as much filler, quote unquote. Like there's a lot of these people that I really enjoy what they do in very different ways.
One of the other good things about this season is it's really uplifting because there's no clear villain. So it's just like positive, fun drag other than like, you know, the Catfisher Man or the Catfisher King. Now they're kind of the villain, but like it's all like it's a great showcase this season of a lot of different stuff. I met Crystal and Widow touring around at the gigs in Kansas City like last year, and like just being able to like welcome them to the family and be like, hi, that was fun. So I like those girls a lot. I like Gigi, I like Jada, I like Heidi, I like Jackie's got great comic timing. Everybody's got something good. It didn't feel like much filler at all. You're right. We're also not here again.
We're fine. We're getting there. But you've been continuing to put out a lot of stuff. You're still fine. Is it fun trying to meet the challenge of how to create content stuck at home?
I mean, if there's one thing everybody knows about me is I put out. It's a bi-weekly thing. I've always been like a YouTuber, so like now everybody feels like they're trying to jump on that train, like, ooh, let me get a backdrop and a ring light. More power to them. Like, the internet is one of those places where like you can just go and do your thing and like make it your own little space, and that's kind of what I've done in my corner of the internet. So I'm just putting out business as usual. Like, I have a backlog of stuff usually of at least like a month's worth of content, usually, most of the time.
Now, more than anybody I know, you have 8,000 things happening at once. Did this derail any big stuff this year for you? Besides, like, oh, I had gigs that I had to cancel?
I can't hear anything.
One more time. You always have tons of stuff happening. Did all of this derail, like, big stuff that was in the works for you?
It's a good shot of the Frozen.
It's the most masculine Willem has ever looked, is this freeze frame.
That could be a headshot right there, that Frozen. I think I'm going to make a screenshot right now to send him. Because that is really, there we go. Very nice shot of him.
He does that every once in a while, like has the beard moment. He lets the curls grow out.
A very handsome guy. So what's his website? Let's play him. I mean, where can they get this t-shirt?
Yeah, he can join back in later. You can get all of Willem's stuff at willembelli.com. If you can't find Willem on the internet, you're not trying very hard. So I'll just give the pre-warning to our next special guest. Okay, we'll get Willem back. Okay, now, oh, look, he finally figured out his laptop. Oh, look.
Girl, I got the Firefox.
Be like, I went back and checked the email and it did say, by the way, this doesn't work on Safari.
I didn't read your fucking email, Mary. Calm
you never
down.
Have. Why would you start now?
Don't make me throw a phone at you through my laptop and break it all.
Be like, this like live stream violence. I've got a black dot on my hand. I'm ready to warn people.
I think I have a wart on my hand.
Oh, no.
That's nasty. That?
Or maybe I cut it, but like it's like right there.
You should.
What I was asking was, you always have 8,000 things planned and going. Did all of this shutdown, besides regular gigs, throw the rest of the year off with stuff?
Yeah.
That's great. Everything. That's a great contribution.
Yeah, everything is fucked. Let me keep smiling. Honestly,
you
like
write another book?
I'm writing it now. Most of it's already written though, kind of, because it's all my old journals.
Is it still from your notes app? Oh, okay.
So I need to like edit them and like put it together and stuff, I think.
Sure.
I've got time in my hands. I'm a very...
Oh, the Frozen on this goddamn laptop, too. Technology hates me. Oh, hey.
Oh, hey. Look at her. Okay, we love you, but I want to bring in our other guests and let the four of us chat for a minute because I'm not worried about his internet. So for those of you who may not be familiar with him, our next guest is someone I became a fan of across the internet. He is an actor and comedian. You have seen him on High Maintenance recently. He just released a brand new stand-up comedy album that was number one on iTunes on Friday. So please welcome to the show, Jay Jordan.
Oh, he's shirtless. I love it.
He knows our audience. Know no, your market.
Traffic. Good for you. Uh-oh.
Jay, your mic is muted.
Are we here? Yeah.
Oh, look at him.
Now he's frozen.
So I was like, it's y'all then, because we pay our bills over here.
It's not. We've done this twice a week for 6 weeks, and this is the first time. It's all
everybody's playing freeze tag. Y'all, freeze tag. You're it. Freeze tag.
But now Willem's alive and well, but we've got...
I'm here, Del.
I see you.
Okay, what's up?
What's up is I'm a new fan. I loved everything. I'm going to be seeking you out anytime I'm depressed because you make me laugh from my gut. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I like Southern queer funny people. So, like, I would argue the architect of, like, Southern Gothic literature, Tennessee Williams, was just a funny Southern gay man who happened to be a genius. So what happens is a lot of people don't understand, like, the most famous drag queen in the world is from Atlanta. Everyone says y'all now because of, like, sissies like us. So whenever, like, Southern gay people ask me to do stuff, I'm always down for it.
We appreciate it. Have you ever met Willem?
Only in the DMs. That only Instagram in the DMs. Only that.
Yes, that's the best place to find Willem.
Oh, it's. I mean, I'm a huge fan. Loved everything. I was a teacher for 3 years, and at one point, I was like, "Today we're gonna be learning about parody and satire, and we're gonna focus a little bit on musical parody at the end." And I showed Child and Chick-fil-A because I was like, "This is a parody of Wilson Phillips. Wilson Phillips is a band that you guys heard at the end of Bridesmaids." So it was good. It was fun.
Is that why you're not? How old
are your kids?
No, I was college. I was a graduate teaching assistant.
Oh, okay. You're good then. I was worried about those preschoolers.
I had, well, they wouldn't care. It's Mississippi. Middle school is grad school. So I was a teacher of like two different classes. And so like, I had like a few kids at the end of it. One guy came out to me. I was the first queer teacher he'd ever had. And a person was a drag queen in my class. Like a person started doing drag. And I was like, that's okay.
Did you tip her?
Yeah, she makes wigs now. Wigs by Exodus, real name Jordan.
Oh, Baron. I know her.
Yeah, Southern girl, yeah.
Word.
Vlogging somebody.
A podcaster just brunched with microphone. A very smart and handsome man said that.
Oh, it was me. Look at that. Yeah, I said that. I think I said it on my album, man, like on somewhere on the internet. But yeah.
Isn't that like number one this week?
It was number one last week. So the week of the 24th of April, it was number one for 3 days. And that bitch, Chelsea Peretti, she's nice. She's married to a black man. So it's fine. Whatever.
Yay. All right, well, Willem, we're going to let you go so we can get Jay bigger on the screen.
Bye, Willem.
We love you. Love you. Thank you for joining us.
Leave studio.
Bitch, bye. Look at you.
Okay. Yeah, I like this.
And that handsome face. So for our new audience that may be newer to you, give us some of your backstory. You are from Mississippi originally.
Yeah, I'm from Mississippi originally. I was born and raised in Mississippi. I went to high school in Mississippi. I went to Ole Miss for undergrad. And then I graduated from Ole Miss and I went to the University of Alabama for grad school. And then I moved to New York. And shortly thereafter, like 2 years, I decided to like really commit to stand up. So... And then things happened relatively quickly. I was very lucky.
Yeah, well, what did you study? Were you an actor?
Oh, yeah. So when I went to Ole Miss, the first thing I did was, so I went to theater school from age 12 to 18 in Mississippi. There are two art schools in the entire state. And I went to like the one in central Mississippi. And then I got to Ole Miss and I was like, no, I'm going to be a bio major. And I took theater as an elective the same way like a Latino person would take Spanish. I'd be like, I know this, but they don't know that I know. And
right.
So
breeze through this.
And so my instructor, Valerie Wilson, she like cornered me one day because she said something about realism. And I was like, yeah, Ibsen. And she was like, what'd you say? And I was like, A doll's house. And she was like, you've acted before. I was like, you've acted before, Val. What the worry? Don't be blowing my spot up. And then she's like, you need to audition. I'm like, for what? She's like, for shows here. And I did. And then I ended up really enjoying it. So I was like, I'll get a theater degree on top of the English degree. And then I went to grad school. Because like everything is so fucking serendipitous and like happenstance. I played like a little bit of an additional adjudication fee at SETC. You could audition for companies. Yep. You know about this.
Uh-huh.
In Chattanooga, or audition for grad schools. You could do both if you were a senior. And I was like, I'll pay this little funky $60. And the University of Alabama was looking for a black male grad student. They were looking for like a male student of color because they didn't have one in their cohort. And they really loved me. And I was like, you guys, I'm pretty comedic. In fact, that's the note I always got. They're like, Jay, don't make people laugh in this scene. It's a funeral. I was like, I've read Angels in America, Joe. I get it. it's always that fucking Pryor and Lewis scene. So then I went to grad school, loved it, did a one-man show there. And you guys will know about this. So sometimes one-man shows, they do a beautiful job of blending like kind of comedy and drama in the vein of like Anna Deavere Smith, Lily Tomlin. There's so many instances of like amazing monologue where you go, oh, I'm laughing. Oh, I'm crying. What is going on? And so I did like a 15-minute final project my third year that was supposed to go in. It was supposed to eventually become an hour. And then my instructor was like, yeah, that's a lot of comedy. I was like, whoops. And so some of those jokes actually started in 2015 that ended up on the album. Like, I think a couple of those jokes were like the seed started way back then.
I have such admiration for the seamlessness of your comedy. You know, it's like, I think people often watch, there's such a huge difference between comedians and people who are funny, and the threads and the way you weave them. Earlier you said, you know, it happened, I was lucky it happened easily. It didn't. It happened because you worked really hard. I mean, even just in the time I've followed you, you work it hard, you work it like it's a craft, and the rise that you have had may look quick on the outside, but you have worked to claim those steps. Let's not dilute the accomplishment.
That means a lot, because there is like this weird, there's this underpinning whenever you're a queer comedian that if you're charismatic, they're like, oh, well, they can all just do that. You're like, yeah, okay, yes. Gay men have been like the arbiters of wit in Hollywood, maybe even further back, like all the way to like Oscar Wilde. But that doesn't mean like we're not working hard to be funny. But they're always like, oh, anyone. I mean, like any gay. I'm like, no, I've met a lot of unfunny gay people, so chill out.
Most.
And also, like, the rest of us have like defense mechanism wit, and that is still different than crafting comedy.
Oh, and you know why that is? It's because in a pre-Ryan Murphy universe, people don't know about this. You got to like open up an old dusty tome. People used to get beat up. Did y'all know this?
Yeah. I'm not familiar. Tell me more.
People used to get beat up. You used to have
That's
to be
so
funny.
Weird.
You used to have to be funny enough that jocks would be like, we're going to leave them alone today.
Literally, I was like, I can make you laugh at me and give me a head start on the running. The other direction.
Well, Leslie Jordan has something in one of his, he's done it many times, where he talks about being the target of dodgeball in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he said, you know, smear the queer. And he said, you just had to start tap dancing and be funny. That's the only way to avoid getting hurt.
It's so, I love, and to see, not only see that, like, kind of thought process go away, I love the fact that we live in this beautiful, kind of almost like, idyllic society where people are like, no, like everyone's supportive, like you can do show choir and run track and field. But then there's another part of me that's like, but also, like don't pluralize it. Don't be like, oh, it never happened. It'll never happen again. Like, let people be individuals. But that's kind of like where I got it from. I always knew if I was funny enough, people wouldn't even like question it, because like I couldn't even articulate being queer until I was in college. So in high school, I always had girlfriends and stuff, but there'd be moments, like one time I was talking to my best friend at the time about a particular football player, and the interview was a football player from Mississippi, Clinton Portis. He was a running back for the Redskins, and like he gave this interview where he says something stupid, and my friend Chris was like, man, did you hear this dumbass in that interview? I was like, yeah, but you see that shirt he was wearing? He's like, Jay, I knew you were gonna say something about that goddamn shirt. And like, so they knew around me, but I didn't know.
Well, and for our audience, you identify as
out of work right now. No, I'm bi or queer. I'm in a gay relationship, but I still consider myself bisexual. And that's a fun little game to play with people. There's new stuff. I'm working on like a new close to 30 minutes where I examine it a little bit more. But I always think that, like, what are rules? What are these rules? I mean, if someone tells you what they are, just believe them. It's, I don't know. Some people get
absolutely. Well, and I ask because, you know, historically, it's often more challenging for men who have sex with men who also have sex with women to not get pushed in the gay label. So I just feel like it's important to talk about the authenticity of, like, you living comfortably in that space. That's yeah. why I just wanted to be able to share that.
I consider myself to be like just a really bad straight, but also a really bad gay. Like, I just want to be horrible across the board.
Right. You're like a futon. You're not really good at either. So you're stuck in the middle.
Oh my gosh. I was working on like a new thing where I was trying to explain it to people. And I was like, the reason I identify as bi is because it's 2020 and women also have money, so
accurate and can pay for things.
Yeah, we've all seen Hollywood by Ryan Murphy. Yeah, I'm who's gonna pay for this?
Correct. But also, somebody had a very important question, Jay. I wanted to make sure we got this.
Is Jay wearing
Philip
pants?
Hodges asked,
I
is Jay wearing pants?
I'm not wearing a shirt though.
Yeah,
yeah,
the
we
view
see
is
that.
Appreciated.
Jay wearing pants.
But along with your quick and just and well-earned rise quickly in comedy, you were an actor as well. You did yeah. an episode of High Maintenance earlier this year.
I did. I played a sex worker, which was fun. A bit of a stretch because they make more money than comics.
Aspirational.
they also point of order, HBO cast me as a 33-year-old, and I was like, wait, what?
Said, excuse me? How dare you?
I was like, what? It was really fun. Katya and Ben are amazing directors, creators, showrunners. I really enjoyed the process. An amazing team of people that are committed to telling stories about New York that have non-white people and that have non-straight people at the center of some of those stories. And not because it's a pat on the back, but just because that's what a lot of this city looks like.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to disagree with you, even though you made me laugh hysterically about being the gay best friend, because I think you're a very leading man type.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. I used to tell people. And the rooms, they're all, oh, Jay is adorable. Jay is hot. I mean, there's a lot of...
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of,
the comments is all this.
It's a lot of lusting going on for Jay today.
I used to audition, and I hated doing... like I love August Wilson. I think the Pittsburgh Cycle and the Decalogue is such a huge commitment to a city and to a people. But man, people loved sad black boy monologues. There were so many times that I was like, "Are we about to hear? Oh, from Fences again? Okay,
there you go." I teach playwriting at NSU LA every year, and Fences is always chosen. But it's not because of anything except. I make them read. I go, if you're going to write, you're going to read.
Yeah. And
so I always know the really lazy students because they choose Doubt or Fences because they're the shortest plays.
Oh, Doubt. I'm too old to be the little black boy that was molested in Doubt.
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge. But I could be his mom in drag. Del, we could do it.
You could do that. The Viola Davis, that popped her career, didn't it?
So my history with theater also very much informed my trajectory as a comic, because a lot of comedians, when they become comics, it's their first time having to actually captivate an audience live. They don't understand from a stage presence standpoint what it means to be like active and even react in real time. And so my set, I've done some of these jokes thousands, close to like hundreds of thousands of times, but I still have to say it like it's the first time for an audience member, just because some of these jokes are rooted in discovery for them and for me, and that's still acting.
Yes, absolutely.
You're absolutely wonderful. I want to direct you someday in a movie or something.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. They're
bitch or something. And
hey Jay, tell the people all the places they can find you while I pop this up.
Okay, you can. Oh yeah, that's me as a baby. Look at that little sassy black kid.
How cute is he?
You can find me on Facebook at Jay Jordan Comedy. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jay Jordan, JayJurden. Like it says on your screen, all one word. And you can also find me, on LinkedIn if you want to go that route. But yeah, all my clips are online, jayjordan.com, and the album is in stores. It's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Pandora. If you call me and send me $10, I will do all 48 minutes of it on the phone.
I mean, y'all, that is a gift.
Just get up. Are you on Cameo?
No, I'm not on Cameo.
Jay. Get on. I'll get you set up on Cameo. Yes,
I would love it.
You would do well on Cameo.
You understand how many lily white couples want a black man to call his wife and just
be the buck?
I do some cuck play on Cameo. That's what it's for, right?
Yes, but also that thing that you do on Instagram, you say, give me a topic and I'll write you a joke about it. That would kill on Cameo too.
Oh yeah, I love Del. So I do this thing, I'll do it this week. I basically, because I like joke writing and kind of on the fly, if someone gives me a topic, I can usually get a quick turnaround on a pretty fast joke in like 5 or 10 minutes usually. So as I do it, I try to do it like every week. I'll do it again this week because people like it. But yeah, how are you guys doing quarantine wise?
We've been writing daily, you know, keeping ourselves like with something productive and then trying not to annoy the other people in the house.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm just like an old Southern woman. I have 3 chihuahuas, 2 bird feeders, and I've started planting tomatoes.
You're not Southern if you're planting tomatoes. They are tomatoes.
Tomatoes. I got my tomatoes. I got some zucchini. I got me some impatience I put out. So, anyway, I mean, we're doing, you know, it's hard. You're an extrovert. I'm an extrovert. It's hard. I miss the choice of going out.
My boyfriend's coworkers are sick of me and he's working remotely.
In the background of his work calls?
Oh, 100%. There have been at least 3 instances where he's like, could you at least close the robe? I'm like, okay, I'm going to try.
Be like, I guess fine, but give the people what they want. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. I really do enjoy it. And thank you.
Pleasure discovering you this week. Thank you, Emerson, for introducing me to this comic genius. Oh my lord.
I do not work at the Apple store. Don't call me that.
Everybody out here that's listening, if you go and look and just go on YouTube and look up Jay, you will go down a rabbit hole because you'll just go from one to another.
And then buy the album and put some coins in the man's pocket.
Buy the album. Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye, Jay.
Bye, Jay.
He's so delightful. I knew that would be a super fun. And it's so interesting because you can hear it in his comedy. You know, it's smart. It's well thought out. The jokes are surprising. And the delivery is really crafted like an actor's perspective. It's not just, here's a great joke. Like, everything about the rhythm is effortlessly worked and planned and performed to just roll out.
It's really well done. And just, like you said, it's effortless and smart. You don't see where he's going with it. That's what I love about it.
You can't see the end of the joke coming. All right, everybody. Well, we hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for sticking around. Feel free, if you have $1 or $5 or $10 or more to spare, send us a tip. It's at the banner below. Venmo at Emerson Collins or to PayPal. BeardCollinsShoresProductions@gmail.com. We love doing this. Thank you for being with us. Enjoy your evenings and we'll see you on Friday.